Good afternoon. I would like first to thank Steve and Mary for inviting me and for the wonderful hospitality. Ecosystems, what makes it difficult to study them is the fact that almost any ecological process involves different levels of organization. Ecologists distinguish among four or five such levels, starting with the most basic level of a single individual of a given species. The next level is the level of a population, a group of individuals of the same species, like this patch of squirrel that contains maybe about 30 individuals. When the population becomes large enough, new properties may appear at that level, like patterns of special patterns that we see here in this grass, Paspalum vaginatum, common grass in golf courses. The next level is the community level, and here we talk about a number, or many large number, of populations of different species. And here, two new properties appear at that level, like species diversity and how it's related to climatic conditions, for example, or diversity-productivity relationships. And beyond that is the ecosystem level that deals with communities and their interactions with the environment. So, simple questions such as how climatic changes affect species diversity, which is an important question because it bears on ecosystem function and stability. Such simple questions are actually quite complex because it is not enough to study how any single individual of any species responds to some environmental changes, because there are indirect processes that involve different levels of organization, like population level, community level, that affect that are relevant to that question and affect the outcome, in that case, species diversity. And actually, in this talk, I'll describe two examples of such indirect processes. One has to do with the formation of vegetation patterns, special patterns. Climate changes may induce or vegetation patterns or may induce transition among different types of vegetation patterns. And these in turn affect resource distributions, seed dispersal, consumer pressure, like grazing, and all of these affect species diversity. So this is an indirect process that affect species diversity. And another example that I'll discuss here has to do with interspecific plant interactions, that is, interaction between different species. And we'll see that climate change may affect these interactions, in particular may induce transitions from competitive interactions to facilitative interactions, and this obviously also affects species diversity. So more generally, we can say that environmental changes affect species assemblage properties like diversity by inducing indirect processes involving various levels of organization, often across different spatial scales. And to cope with this complexity, we propose to use a mathematical modeling approach as a tool that is complementary to field and laboratory experiments. And the added value of mathematical modeling is that it circumvents certain limitations of laboratory and field experiments, such as the duration of the experiments, which are usually short, the spatial extent, which is usually very limited, and most importantly, the fact that the control over environmental factors is usually very limited. So mathematical modeling, by circumventing these limitations, allow identifying asymptotic behaviors rather than transients, isolating factors and elucidating mechanisms of various ecological processes, studying various scenarios of ecosystem dynamics, proposing and testing management practices, and some more things. The mathematical modeling has also its own limitations, and perhaps the most severe one is that they simplify the reality and quite often oversimplify it. And the big challenge is to propose simple models, but models that not only reproduce observed results, but also have predictive power. And in order to have predictive power, we have to go into details, and this is contradicts or this there is a trade-off between simplicity and going into details. But we have to go into details if we want to have predictive power, and the details are many times are identifying and modeling basic feedbacks that exist in the system. Okay, I'll start with a brief background. I'll talk briefly about vegetation patterns and then describe two feedbacks between biomass and water and between above ground and below ground biomass that are very important to the questions that we will address here. And then I will introduce a platform of mathematical models that we use to study questions relating to vegetation pattern formation, how they change along rainfall gradients, mechanisms of species interaction and coexistence, and which bear on species diversity. And I'll actually proceed gradually, starting from population level, going to small communities, two species communities. The two species community will be a woody herbaceous system, which is the most common system in arid regions or in water-limited regions. And if I have time, I'll go to many species communities, but I'm not sure I'll have time for that. Okay, what we see here is an aerial photograph of a vegetation pattern, banded vegetation, people call it tiger bush patterns, patterns on hill slopes. The vegetation bands are oriented perpendicular to the slope. And although this observation has been taken, or this picture has been taken 50 years ago about, the realization that this is a self-organization phenomenon or symmetry breaking phenomenon, very much like other patterns that we are familiar with in nature, this realization is pretty recent. It's only a matter of the past 10 years or so. And here there are some reviews about that. These patterns have been observed worldwide. Here is a map showing arid and semi-arid regions where vegetation patterns have been observed. Now, underlying these patterns are various feedbacks. And I want to focus on two feedbacks that can induce patterns or pattern formation. The first feedback has to do with the effect of vegetation on the infiltration rate of surface water into the soil. It turns out that bare soil in arid regions tends to be covered by crusts, usually biological crusts made out of cyanobacteria, that reduce the infiltration rate of surface water into the soil. They do that by excreting a sticky material that form a thin matrix, solid matrix. They also excrete polysaccharides that swell in the contact with water, and this also help block the pores of the top soil layer. And the net effect is that they can reduce significantly the infiltration rate of surface water into the soil. Now, these cyanobacteria need sunlight for photosynthesis, so they don't grow under vegetation patches because of shading and by the leaves and the litter. And so vegetation patches act as sinks for surface water. Let me show you just pictures, demonstrations of this, of the existence of this crust. You see here the borderline between Israel and Egypt. Is there a pointer here? And the reason why you see it in satellite picture is that the Israeli side is covered with this crust with higher density than the Egyptian side. And the reasons for that is that, thank you. The reason for that is that the Egyptian side, there is a lot of grazing activity, and the sheep and the goats, by trampling, they destroy this thin, fragile crust. The Israeli side is more restricted. There are areas declared as natural reserves, army bases, and so on. And actually, since the peace treaty with Egypt, this line has become sharper and sharper over the years. And you also see them in aerial photographs. The Israeli side is darker because of the crust than the Egyptian one. Okay, so we have these patches of vegetation that act as sinks for surface water. And this is induce a positive feedback between biomass and water, because since we have here biomass, there's more water infiltration. There's more soil water content, which helps the biomass grow even further, increase even further the infiltration rate, and this is a positive feedback. Another positive feedback has to do with the roots, and actually it's the feedback between above-ground biomass and below-ground biomass, the roots. As the plant grows, the root system extends in size, probe new regions where it can take up water from, and so the amount of water available to the plant increases. Then the plant can increase even further, extend even further its root system, explore new regions, and so on. So this is also a positive feedback. In the model, we will quantify these two feedbacks by two parameters. One is the infiltration contrast between bare soil and vegetation, or between vegetation patch and bare soil, C. And the other one is the root augmentation parameter, and I'll define them shortly. I just want you to become familiar with these parameters. And another note is that both feedbacks involve water transport. One is through surface water flow. One is through the root system that takes up water from the surroundings. And while this water transport helps the vegetation patch grow, it inhibits the growth in their surroundings, and this is a mechanism for pattern formation. So, in fact, both feedbacks, even alone, can induce patterns, and this we see in the model that we propose. This is the model, or this is the model at the population level meaning one species. And the model consists of three dynamical variables: the biomass, this is the above ground biomass per unit area, the soil water content per unit area of ground area, and H is the height of a thin surface water layer above ground level. So let's begin with the last equation. This equation actually can be derived from shallow water theory. What we have in this equation is the precipitation rate, I is the infiltration rate, and these are terms that describe transport or the flow of surface water, where zeta is a prescribed function that describes the topography. We will usually work with either flat topography or constant slope. In the equation for W, we have the infiltration rate, which is now a source term for W. It's a loss term for H, but source term for W. Evaporation term, water uptake term, and water transport term describing the flow of water in the soil. And in the equation for B, we have the growth rate. We have a kind of logistic saturation, and this represents restrictions that are not related to to the growth to the water limitation. This may represent, for example, parasites that become significant as the plant grows. They don't kill the plant, but they slow down its growth. And this is a seed dispersal term describing local dispersal. Now, you may ask, where are the two feedbacks that I talked about? So one feedback is here. This is the parameter eta describing the root augmentation feedback. And it comes in the expression for the root system. In fact, if we look at the growth rate of the biomass, this is not just a constant. It's or not just proportional to W, but it has this non-local form because the growth rate of biomass at a given point depend not only on the water at that point, but also on the availability of water in the surroundings where that the roots of that plant extend to, okay, and pick up water from. So this is the growth rate at point R is affected by the water content at point R prime, which the roots extend to. And this is a Gaussian function that this kernel describes the root system, and the width of the Gaussian describes the size of the root system. And we assume that the width depends on the above ground biomass. This is the way we model the root augmentation feedback. As root augmentation feedback is the effect that as the above ground biomass grows, the root system extends in size. So as B above ground grows, the root system extends in size with a proportional proportionality constant eta, which is basically can be regarded as ecologists call root-to-shoot ratio. This kernel also appear in the uptake rate of water from the soil, and it's a non-local effect because the uptake at a given point in space depends also on plants, at distant plants that sends the root to that point, to that place. The other feedback is captured by the form for the infiltration rate. It should depend on biomass, as I explained. The infiltration rate is higher at vegetation patches. And this specific form is a form that has been supported by observations. And there's the parameter infiltration control C has the effect. If C is equal to 1, means that there is no infiltration contrast and the infiltration rate is just a constant. But when C is much larger than unity, then the infiltration rate is low at bare soil but high under vegetation patches where the biomass is high. Okay, let me show you now simple solutions of this equation. Simple solutions, I mean uniform stationary solutions. We have two such solutions, bare soil, zero biomass everywhere. These solutions are described by this diagram, which sometimes is called a bifurcation diagram. We plot on one axis dynamical variable, and the other axis represents some parameter, in this case, precipitation. And so the bare soil solution is just this horizontal line. Now, in this bifurcation diagrams, we have the convention that solid line represents stable states. Stable states mean states that if we perturb them impose small perturbations. These perturbations decay out in the course of time and the system recovers its state. And the unstable states are denoted by dashed lines. So what this result is telling us is that bare soil is stable up to some critical precipitation value. And from that value on, it is unstable, which makes sense. So when the precipitation is low and we spread seeds, they won't germinate into vegetation. But here, when the precipitation is sufficiently high, they will germinate and grow and will get into some vegetation state. The other uniform solution is uniform vegetation. This solution is stable at high precipitation rates and loses stability as we go below some critical value. And then some pattern states develop, and it develops in the following way. Burn holes or gaps in the uniform cover develops, and in fact, if we wait long enough, they will form hexagonal patterns. If we keep decreasing the precipitation rate, this pattern persists to some extent, but at some point it goes by itself an instability to a different pattern, which is shown here. This is a stripe pattern. It's like the holes merge together to form stripes. And again, this pattern persists. We keep decreasing precipitation. This pattern persists until we reach another point where it loses stability to a different pattern, and this time this is a spot pattern. And below that, if we keep decreasing precipitation, it eventually will get a debarred soil state. This was the situation for plant topography. If we consider a slope, we have similar behavior as far as the uniform states are concerned. Also, the pattern states are similar, except that instead of stripes that form labyrinth patterns because of the isotropy of the system, now we have a slope that induces anisotropy, and the bends or the stripes reorient perpendicular to the slope. And let me show you the development of such bends from random initial condition or from uniform vegetation with random perturbations. And what you see two things. One is that the pattern migrates uphill, and the other one that eventually it reorients to form bends that are perpendicular to the slope. Downhill is downward. And the reason why they migrate uphill is that the top part of the bend gets a lot of water because of runoff from the bare area uphill. The bottom, so it can grow. The bottom part lose runoff, so altogether it has significantly less water than the top part, and it can die out. But we are talking about very low drift velocities on the order of centimeters per year, and there are indeed reports, observations of such slow migration. Okay, now another outcome that comes from this model is that there are precipitation ranges where we have a multi-stability of states, or mostly bistability of states. And for example, we have a precipitation regime where the bare soil is stable, but also a spot pattern is stable. So this is the diagram that I've shown you before, and here we added this solution branch that describes a spot pattern. And what we plot here is that is the maximum amplitude of the spot pattern. And so so this is the range of bistability, and there are in fact bistability ranges between any consecutive pair of states, that is between stripes and spot and stripes and holes and uniform vegetation. Now, what are the implications of this bistability? First, that it allows for stable localized structures like single patches surrounded by bare soil as stable structures. And let me demonstrate that with an interactive animation that actually you can look at this website. Okay, so I'm choosing a precipitation rate of 120, for example, a millimeter per year. And if I start with initial conditions of uniform vegetation, bare soil, or a single patch. If I start with uniform vegetation, I get a spot pattern. If I start with bare soil, I get bare soil. We introduce perturbations, but the perturbations decay out. So this implies that we have biostability in the same environmental conditions, same precipitation. Depending on the initial conditions, we get either spot pattern or bare soil. We have biostability of states. And this allows, if we start with a single patch, to get a stable patch structure, isolated one. And in fact, mathematically, this problem has been studied a lot quite recently in the context of what people call homoclinic snacking. And using this mathematical theory, actually, one can draw an analogy between these localized structures and many other localized structures in nature, like cavity solitons in semiconductor lasers, or oscillons in a vibrated surface, vibrated layer of fluid, and so on. Another implication of these biostability ranges is that we can have specially mixed patterns. And let me illustrate that with, with this interactive animation. If I choose 240 millimeter per year, starting with bare soil, for example, we get a pattern which is a mixture, special mixtures of stripes and spots, because both stripes and spots are stable at this precipitation value. If I take 360, we get a mixture of holes and stripes and so on. So what this tells us is that we have five basic vegetation states: uniform coverage, uniform vegetation, holes, hole pattern, stripes, spots, and bare soil. But because of this bistability and maybe sometimes even tristability, we have a much wider variety of patterns because of these specially mixed patterns. Another important implication of this bistability is that it allows for state transitions from one state to the other. And actually, this provides a dynamical system view of desertification. Desertification is defined as an irreversible decrease in biological productivity induced by climate change or by human activities. And so we can think of a system at that level of precipitation and covered by some spot pattern. And now imagine there is a drought that takes that reduces precipitation down to here, say, where the upper state no longer exists. And then there must a transition to the only available stable state at that precipitation level, which is the bare soil, must take place. Now, we can imagine the drought is over. We are back to the same environmental conditions, same precipitation value, but the vegetation does not recover because the bare soil is stable. We need particularly rainy years to come in order for the vegetation to recover by itself. So this actually, this is a view of desertification recovery as a hysteresis loop. And let me show you pictures that I took on Sunday this week in Israel that appears to indicate on a desertification process occurring in the Negev Desert. This is an area, the site that is explored by Moshe Shachak, a colleague of mine, ecologist. And what he observed is these patterns of white spots. And it turns out that this is the remains of a spot pattern of a certain shrub, Nua macronata, and that because of the long drought that we experience now in Israel, died out. And this ghost pattern of white spots are actually snails that live on, feed on this on dead branches of these shrubs. And so we see patches where we still see the shrub, and some other patches where the shrub is completely gone. And eventually also this white spot will be gone away. And but what remains to be seen is whether when the drought is over and the rainy years resume, whether the vegetation will recover or not. If it's a desertification phenomenon, we should expect them not to recover, unless we have very, very rainy years. Okay. The positive feedbacks that induce vegetation patterns are also responsible for this biostability ranges, and this tells us that the stronger the feedbacks, the wider the biostability range, and the less vulnerable to desertification the system is. If the root augmentation feedback, for example, is stronger, it means that the spot patterns persist at lower precipitation rates, and so they are less vulnerable to fluctuations in rainfall, for example. There are many more causes and forms of desertification: gully formation by erosion, active sand dunes, the human factor, like bad management practices and so on. This is one limited aspect that I touched upon, and this is a whole topic that we don't touch here. Okay, let me give you some examples of vegetation patterns. This is the picture that we saw at the beginning. This is this is in my neighborhood. We were lucky to find these patterns. If we look carefully, we actually could identify all the three states locally that the model predicts: spots, stripes, and holes or dry spots. These are a few more examples. This is a spot pattern that I took from Google Earth. It's near Taos in New Mexico. And last year, I was visiting Los Alamos, and I took my friend, Eric Hagberg. We drove there just to make sure it's not artificial. And it's very flat area. We were looking for something high to look on this pattern from above. But we couldn't, and so it was hard to see the pattern, but it was obviously a natural phenomenon, and the species is sagebrush. These are two other examples. This one shows the mixtures of stripes and spots, and this one shows a mixture of stripes and holes. And so this appears to be consistent with the model predictions. So far, I was talking about biomass patterns, but associated with biomass patterns are saltwater patterns, okay? Because these are coupled to one another. And the saltwater patterns, we expect them to be affected by the relative strengths of the two feedbacks. The infiltration feedback acts to increase the amount of water under vegetation patch, and the uptake root augmentation feedback acts to deplete. So the relative strengths will determine the pattern of the soil water. And actually, we can consider, let's consider two extreme cases. One is a strong infiltration feedback and weak augmentation feedback. And in this case, we see that there is an accumulation of soil water under the patch. The soil water is the dashed line. and the solid line is the biomass. So under the biomass patch, there is accumulation of soil water, more soil water under the patch than in the bare soil away from the patch. And in the other extreme, where the augmentation feedback is strong and the infiltration feedback is weak, we have the opposite behavior. There is a depletion of soil water under the patch and its nearby surroundings as compared with the bare soil away from the patch. And so if we think now of another species and interactions between species, then this situation represents a facilitation or facilitative interactions, and other species may colonize here because of the high, better environmental conditions, more water, while this case corresponds to competition. Now here, I get either facilitation or competition depending on the parameters that control the two feedbacks, but as we'll see shortly, even if we keep these parameters fixed and change some other parameter, environmental parameter like the precipitation rate, we can get a transition from competition to facilitation, but I'll come to that later on. Okay, so let's proceed now to the community level. So now we are talking about a number of different species, populations of different species, and we'll take them to represent different functional groups, and actually I'll consider here only two species, representing woody vegetation and the other one herbaceous vegetation. So B1 woody and B2 herbaceous. And one can evaluate the bifurcation diagram for this case. Let me skip that and discuss now interactions between the two species. So let's consider first the woody species alone. And what I want to show you is that the woody species can ameliorate its microenvironment by increasing the water content as aridity increases. And this is shown in this picture. So what we see here is this is the precipitation, and this is the soil water content in bare soil. Okay, this is the B line. And the S line represents the maximal soil water under vegetation patch. And what we see is that at high precipitation, there is more soil water in bare soil as compared than under the patch. This we see here, more soil water here than under the patch. Whereas at low precipitation, there is more soil water under the patch as compared with the bare soil. And the mechanism for that can be understood by making the water balance under vegetation patch. There are two factors affecting this balance. There is the infiltration, increased infiltration that acts to increase the amount of water under the patch, and that there is water uptake by the roots that acts to deplete the amount of water. So we should see how these two factors are affected as we go from high precipitation to low precipitation. So the infiltration rate depends on the biomass, but we see that it is quite flat here at high biomass. So even if the biomass is reducing, even significantly, the infiltration rate reduces only a bit. So as we go from high precipitation to low precipitation, the infiltration rate remains high, and at those areas that are still covered by vegetation. We also see that as you go from here to here, the width of the pulse reduces significantly. It means that there are many more individuals taking up water from any point than here. So the uptake here is much larger than here. So if you talk about water gain, it remains the same per unit area. If we talk about water loss due to uptake, here it's much higher than here. And therefore, we have this crossover. And now we can simulate the model with another species, and it's easy to find another species, B2, representing herbaceous species, that at high precipitation can grow only in the open areas away from the woody patch, whereas at low precipitation, the only place where it can grow is under the patch, under the woody patch. And Okay, and there were a number, several groups that have studied this transition from competition to facilitation as some environmental stress increases. And this is results of one group in Israel that studied the interaction between woody and shrubs and annuals along the rainfall gradient in Israel, starting from the north, where it's quite wet, to the south, which is quite dry. And what we see that in the north, the biomass of annuals is higher in the open areas than in the woody patch. And this trend is reversed as we go to drier conditions. Drier conditions, we have more annual biomass under the patch than in the open areas. And here it's even the difference is more pronounced. Okay, so what it means is that woody patches can buffer species diversity loss as aridity increases. And this is an example of this indirect process that affects species diversity that one has to take into account when studying diversity. Let me show you one more example of such an indirect process, which has to do with transitions between different pattern states. So now I want to consider a system with a slope in a bistability range of bended pattern and spotted pattern. And we start with the bended pattern, downhill is to the right, and we make a perturbation, strong perturbation. We remove the biomass in the top bend. This is a local perturbation, but strong. So if it were a very weak perturbation, since the bended pattern is stable, the perturbation would go away and we will stay with the bended pattern. But this is a strong perturbation. It's local, but strong. And let's see what does it do. Okay, so what we see is that since now this area is open, this bend gets more water, runoff water, and it grows. As it grows, it develops more longer roots and it outcompetes its neighbors. Okay, so we have here and here biomass decay, and now these two areas are getting more water. Draw water from their surroundings, outcompete their surrounding patch segment of the bend, and eventually we get a transition to the spot pattern. So basically, we have here a perturbation that induces transition between the two stable patterns of the system, from the bended pattern to the spotted pattern. Now we can look at the soil water profile as we go along this transition. And what we see is that the soil water content under a spot is higher than under a bend. And the reason for that is that a spot sees a bare soil uphill, which is twice as long as a bend, and therefore there's more runoff accumulating there. So now we can study the response of a second species, herbaceous species. So the B1 again is the woody vegetation and B2 is herbaceous vegetation. A response of a herbaceous vegetation to such a transition, pattern transition of the woody species. And what we see in this simulation is that as long as we have bends, the herbaceous vegetation cannot colonize, but once the spot patterns, the spots appear, it can colonize. And so this is an example of species coexistence and diversity induced by a global pattern transitions. So this is what does it mean? It means that it's not enough to study at local scales, to look what happens at this patch scale, because pattern transitions at the global scale may feed back to the local scale. Okay. How much time do I have? 5 minutes? Five, 10? No, that's good. Okay, so let me go briefly. So until now, we consider communities consisting of two species, two functional groups. But each functional group is, we choose one species as representing that group. This does not allow us to address community-level properties like species diversity, like how many species we have in the system. We have just two. I mean, we want to see, to have a large number of species and study how species richness is affected by some, say, climatic changes. So what we do is we basically extend the space over which the biomass variables are defined to include trait space and the trait subspace. And the trait subspace, we use it to distinguish among the different species. So we can imagine here it's a two-dimensional trait space. Xi1 is one trait, Xi2 is another trait. And different points in this plant correspond to different species. Okay, and then if the biomass, and then we view the biomass as depending on this physical space and the trait space, and of course on time. And let me show you a very simple example of this approach. Let's consider a single functional group with one-dimensional trait space. So I'm using one trait to distinguish among the species, but this trait I'm taking to be a trade-off between the ability of a plant to capture the light resource and its ability to capture the water resource. Or in other words, the ability of a trade-off between the investment in above-ground biomass to capture the light resource, or in a below-ground biomass, that is the roots, to capture the water resource. And so we introduce a variable Xi. So the low values of Xi represent big plants and short roots that are better in capturing the light. And large values of Xi represent small plants and big long roots that are better in capturing the water resource. We assume homogeneous system, so we don't have special patterns. And what we find is solutions, stationary solutions of this kind, B as a function of Xi, pulse solutions. And these pulse solutions contain information about three community-level properties. The first property is species richness, which is given by the width of the pulse, because the width of the pulse tell us which species, okay, points along this axis, whose biomass is different from zero. Okay, the wider this pulse, the higher the species richness. The height gives information about species abundance, and the position along this straight axis represents the composition of the community. So now we can use this approach to study these community-level properties as we vary some environmental parameters. So here we vary the precipitation rate, and we see that as we increase precipitation, species diversity increases because the width increases, abundance increases because the height increases, and the average composition moves to lower Xi values, that is to species that is investing more in above-ground biomass and less in roots, which makes sense because there is more water and the competition for light is more important. And now from this approach, we can derive diversity resource relations and study and test various conceptual models that have been proposed in the literature, and also introduce the, a woody species and see how it affects these relations, whether it can buffer species diversity loss and so on. And with this, I would like to conclude. So ecophysical phenomena involve various levels of organization, different time scales and different spatial scales. And this results in many indirect processes that bear on the questions that we ask. We saw a few examples. And these processes include, in particular, bottom-up processes, for example, plant interactions at the local scale that affect vegetation patterns at the landscape scale, and top-down processes where pattern transitions at the global scale or the landscape scale affect plant interactions at the local scale. Various aspects of this complexity can be addressed using a single platform of nonlinear mathematical models that capture basic feedbacks between biomass and water, or above ground and below ground biomass. Theoretical results are consistent with many field observations, but controlled experiments are needed. Steve, do you hear me? Okay. Let me acknowledge my collaborators. Actually, there are many people and there are many aspects that I didn't address here. Erez Gilad, a former PhD student, Jos von Hardenberg from Isaac Turino, Chezi Yitzhak, a colleague from Ben-Gurion University, Yonatan Natan, a PhD student of mine, Moshe Shachak, this is the ecologist that we are working with, Moran Segoli, PhD student of Moshe Shachak, many more. Asaf Kletter, PhD student of mine, and Efrat Schaefer, a master student of Moshe Shachak and myself, and Antonello Provenzale from Torino Isaac. I'm not sure how much they like science, but they absolutely like food. This is what can. Thank you.